Hello, everybody. It's Lynn Scott Hagerman here to give you my weekly podcast. And it is my blessing and my honor today to have Lee Dundas, what a fierce warrior and one of my heroes that you are, Lee. And I wanted to start by telling everyone a bit about how we even connected, which I think is a great story. And I want to highlight this horrific pedophile activity happening to those two beautiful girls in the case that you're representing in Florida. So first, a little bit of backstory for my audience about how Lee and I even got together in the first place. I was so Tracy Joe Jaco, and Lee, I don't even know if you know this story. Tracy Joe Jaco is a good friend. And we were talking on the phone one morning, and all of a sudden she's like, "Oh my gosh, I just got a text. I think it was from Brad. I don't think it was directly from you, but she said Brad wants to do a live show. He wants Michael to get involved, and Lee Dundas is in Florida, and she's getting ready to give a press conference." And then Tracy Joe starts reading about this case, and Tracy Joe and I talk a lot. We're good friends, and both of us, I would say in general, don't cuss. However, God's been correcting me on that lately because, you know, Lee, sometimes there are no better words. So Tracy Joe starts reading the text from Brad, which is about the case, which was your written press release. It's on your website about the case. And every now and then, just a cuss word would come out of her mouth. And then me too, because it's such a horrendous, horrendous story. And then at one point, because of my background, because I'm so much healthier than I used to be, but I can still get triggered at times. So every now and then, Tracy would Joe would say, "We're going to protect your little ears on this one," and she might skip over a detail or two. So then this was 30 minutes before you went live. So I jumped on live on Brad's show and Michael's show. I had him going on two different devices. And because the deep state is messing so bad with our internet system now, you know, Michael never did get you live. And but I was watching and I was texting Brad, "What a fan I am of yours. You're just like an unstoppable freight train without brakes. And I think it's phenomenal." And so then Brad, he texts me, he's like, "Do you want to meet her?" And I'm like, "Yeah." So the next thing we know, we're all texting, and before, well, and plus we were both on his show on Inauguration Day, just on different hours. And so before I have you introduce yourself and tell about the case, I thought I would read just something that Brad said to kick us off. And he said about the two of us, "You ladies are freaking amazing. Many exclamation points, right? Examples for the world. Truly exemplifying the psychology of winning, power of faith, justice, and love." So I figure today that's goalie, fight and win. That's what we're going to do. So thank you again for being on my podcast. And please share about your background, who you are, what you do, and what's happening in this case that you're on.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that lovely introduction. Are you able to hear me okay, by the way? I don't have my
Hey,
microphone. No.
yes,
And
yeah, perfect.
apologies to the masses that you're seeing this Saturday, Lee. I had my podcast appointment at 11 p.m. with poor Lynn tonight, which probably would have been like, I don't know, 2 a.m. her time. But yeah, I suddenly realized my error and slammed a hat over my scary hair. And you're getting the Gardner flannel Lee Dundas look right now. But
Love it, Libby.
yeah, to your earlier point about a freight train with no brakes, I've never been a fan of brakes. I used to love, my parents at the time had a house with a deep a driveway from the street down to their where the house was, so it was
Yeah.
great. And my best friend, the boy across the street, who was 2 years older than me, and I would go to the top of the driveway with our big wheels and just zoom down
Big
and.
wheels.
Yeah, the cowboy boots I had at the time like had this angle on the heel because the first thing my buddy and I would do is yank off that little blue brake because we're like, these things are worthless. And if we needed to stop, we'd brake with our feet. But that's pretty much been, I think, a trait that I was born with probably because I was doing that from the time I was like 3 years old on. And it's still the way I roll, particularly against injustice. I just do it a little differently now. My freight train is no longer a big wheel. It's the power of the pen and the power of my mouth and the power of my intellect, such as it is on a good day. And since, I mean, I've been a practicing lawyer for 30 years. But since 2013, I've really focused on the stuff that's near and dear to our hearts and probably your listeners' hearts, which is sexual violence against children and women and men and boys, but a lot of it is women and children and human trafficking. I mean, it's a huge problem, $150 billion a year industry, which is just ridiculous. Like so many zeros, you can't even, put your head around it.
Yeah.
And 40 million people enslaved, which is everybody in the state of California waking up chained to a bed, being raped 10 times a night for profit, or being chained to a shrimping boat or some lithium battery mine, making metal so that all the people in first world countries can have a cell phone that actually functions. And it's very sad what happens to these mainly children in many cases who are being either sexually exploited in the human trafficking realm or labor exploitation so we can have cheap Nikes and t-shirts and cell phones. But my heart really beat for that for a long time, and I just kept pushing it to the side and making sure I was educated on it, but that was not what I did for my day job. And then in 2013, I got a job offer from an anti-sex trafficking nonprofit, and they were like, "Hey, you want to come on board and be our general counsel and move part-time to Southeast Asia?" And I was nominally their general counsel and prosecutions director, which you normally think of as a, desk jockey paperwork job. And it was that when I was stateside, I was doing contracts and, crazy stuff like that for them. But the real crazy stuff was the 2 weeks a month that I would spend in Thailand and related areas, that whole Southeast Asia, Laos, Cambodia, Thai, Malay region. And we were starting to hire undercover, former SWAT trained special forces type guys. And it's all the stuff you see on the movies and TV. They would, dress cash like I am today and pretend to be pedophiles and go into the brothels and figure out how many girls are they running, where are they from, what ages, how many languages do they speak? Because you can't just go in with all your Navy SEAL guys and bust the brothel and have, 15 kids from age 2 to 15 speaking 15 different languages when you speak English. Like that ain't gonna fly, right? So the intel piece is a really, really critical and critically important point and part, whether you're doing a bust stateside or even more so when you're in a third world or a second world country. So they'd go in and they'd pretend to be Johns, they'd pretend to be pedos. And I gave, for my part, my guys marching orders. I'm like, you are not just there to gather intel on the trafficker, the mama-san, the pimps, the whichever Yakuza mafia, Russian mafia, whichever Asian mafia is running that brothel, because it's never the people in the brothel that are actually in control. They're the drug mules to the head of the cartel, analogy, right? I'm like, your job is also to figure out if there's an American dentist from Chicago buying a 5-year-old that night. And if he's sitting sipping on his beer getting ready to buy, I want his name because it is a crime. A lot of people don't know this. You probably do, Lynn, but most of the time, the way crime works when you're a US citizen is you can only be held accountable for a crime that you commit on US soil. But sex crimes and buying children for sex and trafficking type stuff for those predators, it follows you. So if you go to Cambodia to buy a 5-year-old for a month and rape her endlessly, even though you're not doing the crime on US soil, you're a Chicago dentist. When you come back to America or when you're over there, if they catch you, you will do time, even though maybe it's not against the law in whatever country you're in, although it usually is, even in some of those backwoods places. And when I first worked with one of the FBI guys, we had dinner, lunch actually down in Long Beach. I think he was FBI. He was one of the triple letters. And I was just getting my feet wet. And I said, well, when you catch these guys, where do you prosecute them? Like here or in the country? And he goes, sometimes here, but I'll tell you, a lot of times in the country they're caught in, because it's a lot worse to do 30 years in a Cambodian prison
Oh,
than
yeah.
it is to do 30 years in Club Fed in Chicago and get out in 2 because you had good behavior. And I'm like,
Happy
ooh,
thought.
I like that.
Yeah, I know. Happy thought. Yes, I was thinking, yay, yay. And no, Lee, I did not know that if someone committed those crimes overseas, I mean, that is wonderful, wonderful news. I mean, praise God. So, yeah.
One other piece on that, they actually take the victim restitution funds that you can hit if you're a sex abused youth here and your trafficker goes to prison and they confiscate his yachts and his gold chains from around his neck. And they use a lot of those funds that they convert from the bad guys to paying back the victims for their health care, for their emotional psychological care. And he said, we will actually do that for the little Laotian and Cambodian children who were raped by Americans. And I set my glass of water down the table. I'm like, you do? I was just shocked. I was flummoxed. And he goes, yeah. Does it really matter what nationality the 5-year-old rape victim is? I'm like, no, it doesn't. But I'm shocked that we're so forward thinking right now in this day and age that we're actually using funds, American funds confiscated from American pedophiles to make whole as you can, the 5-year-old victim from Cambodia that he was raping. That's amazing. So
Well,
fascinating stuff.
that's amazing. And the executive orders that Trump has here, the two that are address the trafficking and the pedophiles and all levels of trafficking, but it confiscates the same thing. It confiscates all their property. But what I didn't think though, or maybe know about or think through all that, because we know that the soon we're going to have the currency evaluation. We're going to be on the QFS financial system. So that would likely, in my mind, be part of the restitution to the millions and millions and millions of children in our country who have been abused. I find that very exciting too.
I do as well. I find a lot of what Trump's done in the last 10 days to be, or however many days it's been. It's hot. Every day is like Christmas and the birthday combined. My husband and I wake up and we're like, oh, look at the new executive orders. Like, you can't even keep track. And that's a good problem to have after 4 years of hell. So, yeah.
So you're
So
an
that's.
FBI agent and he told you that. So what happened next?
Yeah, well, so then, we went off to the races and we were running our undercover guys into the brothels and we were liaising with not just the in-country uncorrupted parts of their FBI equivalent organization, which is hard to find. In Thailand, I'll give you an example, on a corruption scale of 1 to 5, their police routinely rank like 4 or 5 most corrupt every year. So it doesn't really do any good to have your sex victim who's a child go running up to the local policeman and pull on his apron strings and go, hey, that white man from Chicago's raping me, help me. Because a lot of times, the reason that guy's a policeman and the reason his kid is in private school in New Zealand is because after his 9 to 5 job with the police department, he goes works 5 to midnight for the brothel, or his brother runs the brothel, or his cousin owns the brothel. So a little victim running up to the average workaday cop in some of these very corrupt countries ends up being fed right back into the machinery, or worse, she'll be burned alive. They'll make her family watch to make an example out of what happens when you try to rat out. So it's very, very important when you're doing the work in these countries that you find nice, clean, not corrupt law enforcement. And we did, and we were working hand in glove with them. They even gave us carte blanche to film rescues and to not take the girls we were rescuing and have them go back in to the state country run trafficking center, because that trafficking rescue facility at the time was on like this weird island in the middle of some river. And when investigative journalists, Lynn, would go in every few years to interview the kids, they would like grab onto the journalist and be like, can you get me out of here? And the journalists would be like, why? And they're like, I'd rather go back to my pimp. It was a better life. Like, it is hell here. Like, and that's saying something when girls like, yeah, send me back to the pimp in the brothel because it's way worse in the trafficking rescue facility. So we
Why?
weren't,
Not
yeah,
to
we,
overflow, but why? How?
well, I mean, same thing that you see with a lot of the child welfare agency stateside. They're actually
Oh,
running
okay.
girls, you know.
Yes, yes.
They're pimping out the girls and persecuting the girls that they're supposed to be in charge of protecting, right? So we, as an organization, we were like, we're happy to help in this country. Glad we've got permission of the governmental organizations to do so, but we're not really okay with rescuing the girls, feeding them into this recovery center that's so bad that the girls are like begging people to get out and go back to their pimp. So we had a memorandum of understanding that I actually drafted for the organization that allowed us to take custody of the girls and make sure they were getting quality aftercare. Yes, in the country, but by Christian missionary forensically trained people who could do good work and not re-traumatize the kid or pimp her out on the side. So that was the work we were doing and really getting up to start rolling full force with when the coup of February-ish 2014 hit Thailand. They have Thai Thailand has a coup about every 6.5 years for the
Right.
last 100. And it's really an object lesson for Americans as to what your life will be like if you don't keep your country free. Because they do not have the right to actually freely elect those who would serve them in these governmental roles. And it is so draconian and awful that every 6 or 7 years, the people hit the streets, they're pushing over the military tanks, they're running the leader out of Dodge on a rail to Dubai, which is what happened with Thaksin, I think, in 2014, who was their leader. And I was there and I was trying to do this work. And I walked out of a Bangkok hotel one day. You have a picture in my book of it. And literally the streets were on fire. The streets were actually on fire. And I was like, whoa. And I called my British colleague that I worked with doing this work. And he's like, I'm like, should I pull out? And he's like, I had an 8-year-old at the time, by the way. And he's like, probably a storm in a teacup. I'm like, oh, that's a word I've never heard, but I get your point. I can think with that. I'm
Yeah.
like, and he goes, I think it'll be fine. And I texted him like 2 hours later. I'm like, schools are closed, post office closed, government's closed, the hotels are starting to close. So I'm not going to have anywhere to live. And he's like, yeah, it's getting pretty real. Pull out. But if you can see
Oh, yeah.
the military on the street, there's a fire behind it, there's a riot line of cops holding off the public. This is what it looks like when the public surrounds. There's green hats in the middle here. I don't know if you can
Yeah,
really see. Bunch of
you
green
can
hats.
see them, ladies. Yep.
That's the military. That's what it should looks like to show up for freedom. So I
Wow.
learned a lot that month. I learned it finally ended. Funny segue in the story. It finally ended. It was two steps forward, two steps back. Military people, kind of a stalemate, Mexican standoff. And then finally, the Thailand farmers were like, you know what? We've had enough. And they got in there. Big old Caterpillar tractors and their backhoes and their big old farm equipment. And they humped and jumped their way over the Thai countryside for like 8 hours. And they started to encircle Bangkok International Airport. And they
Wow.
brought that country to its frickin' knees. They didn't even need to fully encircle the airport. The government knew what was up. No trade in or out, especially all the sex tourists and the tourists who come to Thailand. I mean, there's good stuff to see in Thailand, even if you're not a sex tourist. So they have a heavily dependent tourist economy. And like every country, they rely on in and out commerce by way of air. So when the Thailand farmers made their move and started to surround it, that was game over. The Thailand government was like, okay, you win. And I remember Lynn being there and
Yeah.
looking at this and going, there's a lesson here. I now know how to run a convoy to effect mass societal change if I need to. And then I was looking at God. I'm like, okay, I guess that's why I'm here in addition to busting brothels. And then I laughed. I'm like, I'm a freaking Orange County soccer mom with an 8-year-old. When am I going to need to run a convoy in order to like fix a government? Fast forward years. And there I am running our bi-coastal U.S. People's Convoy to lever open the blue state governors who were still smoking their crack pipe and had us all locked down. But,
Yeah.
God has you in a place and a time and a season for a reason. And sometimes you don't know why until the passage of years. But yeah, that was the work we were doing. And I've been doing that on and off ever since. It really makes my heart happy. I've trained a lot of law enforcement. Some lawyers, prosecutor types, judges as well on best practices when you're dealing with human trafficking. In the main, what that means is don't arrest the girl. She's a serial rape victim. You don't arrest the girl. Nobody wants to be a
Right.
child prostitute. That's not a thing. You cannot consent to sex or rape when you're a child. So why the hell are we, you would never, if your child were kidnapped from your house at age 10 or 15 and you found her with some pedophile 3 days later, you wouldn't arrest her. You would take her to the nearest hospital and have a SAR, a sexual abuse type exam, CERT exam done. Like, why we treat it differently when the girl is caught on the street in the presence of her pimp and a pedophile who's paying good money in American dollars to buy her really just angers me. But we would make the point with these various police officers and their agencies, stop erecting the victim. She needs to go to the hospital and be forensically interviewed. And then you need to take her statement and arrest the people who are driving the market, which is the demand side of the equation. As bad as these pimps are, as awful as they are, as much as we'd like to all ship them off to Mars, the fact of the matter is they wouldn't be selling humans if nobody were buying. They would go back to
Exactly rightly.
Yeah, they would be running guns and weapons and coke and heroin like they did for years. So if you arrest the boys who are buying, 90% of the buyers are men. So I'm going to say boys and men. If you arrest the guys who are buying and the guys who are selling, that actually stops the industry. But most of the time in huge cities, Chicago, you name it, LA, we have in the main been arresting the girls. And I will tell you, the Cal DOJ, our stateside Department of Justice, when I was first doing this work in 2013, published a 10-year retrospective from 2002, I think it was, to 2012. And they admitted that cops statewide had arrested, I think the number was 4,251 children for the crime
Children.
of having been raped. Give me one second. I don't know why my desk phone is ringing. One second.
I
Hello.
can't hear it.
He is here in the house. Do you need him? Okay, I'm on a live broadcast, but I will try to scream and get him to answer. Give me one second. Yeah. Got it. Got it. Bye, babe. Okay, that was my child. She needs her daddy or one of us.
Hey.
It's gonna be dad. I'm gonna mute out and then I'm gonna scream for my husband. So give me one second.
Do it. I love spontaneity, don't you? This goes to show you, she's a fierce mom, fierce attorney, fierce woman.
Okay, I'm back.
Yeah,
Sorry.
I love
Anyway,
it.
so two of these kids, and I'll finish with the story. Two of the children that are California's men in blue, our finest officers arrested, were nine. And I had a
Good.
9-year-old at the time. And I remember reading that report and going, okay, guys, I get how if you're rolling down Anaheim Boulevard in front of Disney and you see two tarted up girls who've hit puberty with their girls up to their clavicle and their faces all painted and their hair all done and 5-inch heels on, I get how you might mistake that they are actually adult prostitutes and not 16, 17-year-old child victims. There is no, I walked into my daughter's third or fourth grade class the next day, looked at every single girl in the room, and I was like, there's no way in hell you could take any one of these 9-year-old girls, put them in the tallest heels ever, the most amount of face paint ever, do their hair, and have any person with a freaking brain believe that they were over the age of 18. What the F are these officers doing arresting 9-year-olds for the crime of being raped? I
And what is
was
the answer
livid.
to that? I mean, absolutely. So why on earth? And you said it's not just California. You said it's in, like, you see it across the country. What is that? What, I mean, what is it?
What that is in many cases is two things: ignorance or willing blindness. So
Yeah.
these men don't know better. I mean, we used to call the police department section that dealt with these crimes, the vice department, and their mandate was to arrest the girl. Now we go in, Orange County Human Trafficking Task Force has a best in practices. We were one of the first to start actually doing it right in the country, if not the first. So we took the model that worked and we're going and training other law enforcement departments and prosecutors on it now. We have been for, I don't know, 15 years, something like that. And we say, hey guys, you need to flip your vice department. You need to re-educate your cops that the girls are the victims, they're not the perps. And you need to stop sending the buyer to the equivalent of traffic school. They actually have a thing called John School. It's like a slap on the wrist where you get to go on Saturday for
The
4 hours.
pedophiles go to John School as opposed to prison? Oh, Lee, it just makes you want to scream. I can't even begin to comprehend this. No
Right?
wonder, no wonder we have 800,000 children in this country missing a year because this pedophilia is legalized. That if it's legalized pedophilia, it just.
That's it. And if you don't, so the work of Melissa Farley, Farley, she's a PhD researcher who I think has been doing this work since the 80s or 90s, minimally. And I think she was out of NorCal, San Francisco, Tenderloin District. And she'd go into the rough areas and she talked to the men who buy. And she has a study out called Men Who Buy that was published with two co-authors some many years ago now. And she'd ask the men, what would make you change your ways? And going to a class was like, I don't know, like 10 or 20%, not very effective at getting them to change lanes on their behavior.
Oh my God.
But if you stiffen criminal penalties, it's
Yeah.
like 75%. If you throw them in jail, I want to say it's like same, like 75 to 80%, even if it's just for a night, even if you just put them in the drunk tank for a night. But here's the real pivot point. If you name and shame them, by publishing their face, their name on a billboard or in the newspaper or online with their crime, something like 87%, pretty much, what, 9 out of 10 of these men were like, I would never do it again. Why? Because a lot of these men have professional license. There's architects, they're accountants, they're lawyers, they're judges. They don't want people to know what they've done. They don't want their children to be bullied at school. So St. Petersburg, Florida, right around the time I started doing the work in 2013, just before that, they did a fascinating thing. They were having a huge problem with men buying girls for sex. Nothing was moving the dial on this criminal equation. And they were, and I don't even think they knew about the work of Melissa Farley, but their little exhibit in their goldfish bowl is exhibit A as to the fact that what she said actually works. They did two things. They started naming and shaming. They had a billboard program where they'd put the guy's name and face and the fact that he was arrested for buying children for sex and
Oh,
was about
that's
to stand
horrible.
trial on the billboards, big font, like
Oh,
Joe
yeah.
Blow,
Oh,
big face, you
yeah.
know?
Love it.
Yeah, I do too.
Legitimately. Oh, my
Okay,
gosh.
you're gonna really love the next thing though. The
Okay.
second piece of this is
Yeah.
where the rubber really met the road, Lynn.
Okay.
The second piece of this is they decided in their wisdom to send a Dear Mrs. John letter. You know, we call the John. Dear Mrs. Pedophile letter to the wife
Oh,
that
yeah.
basically said, Dear Mrs. So-and-so, you probably aren't aware of this, but your husband was arrested on the wrong side of St. Petersburg, Florida on Saturday at midnight, attempting to buy two or three underage girls for sex. We assume you probably don't know about his proclivities, but we also assume that you might want to know about those. And in particular, given his proclivities, you might want to route yourself to the nearest STD center come Monday morning to get yourself checked for chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, and AIDS so that you don't die an early death. Sincerely, your local health department. And the combination of that letter to
I
the
love
wife,
it. I love
yeah,
it.
it dropped the incidence of sex buying over frickin' night in St. Pete, Florida by 25 and a half per or 24.5%. One quarter shift off of just that program, which is huge if you know anything about statistics, to introduce one variable I
Yeah.
love.
Oh, yeah.
This stuff works, guys. We just need to crack down on the demand side. You teach your boys you don't buy people for any reason, especially sex, and you penalize heavily the men who do. And when you do that, you get no prostitution, you get no sex buying. Sweden made buying sex with women of any age, any purchase commercial of sex in their country years ago. To be the equivalent of a US felony. So these guys are going away for, better part of a decade. Again, overnight, it was a 51% led legislature. So a
Yeah.
bunch of by women. So the women led the way, but they made this new law in their country. And immediately there was like virtually zero trafficking or prostitution. All the pimps are like, dude, I don't want to get caught here. I'm going to go to Amsterdam. I'm out. See you later.
So then let's add on top of that the Florida death penalty for pedophiles. Now, Lee, I want this nationwide and tell us, how do we get this nationwide? Because the death penalty for pedophiles, that is the ultimate. I mean, and it's justice. That is justice. Because I speak, so when I was trafficked, I was birthed to 5 years old. I speak for the little ones, and I call them serial killers because they kill these children. And even when they're any underage, but they kill them. And it's a lifetime of imprisonment and all kinds of continuous, and sex has nothing to do with it. These kids don't even know what that is. It's physical and mental torture for, and so it's, to me, every act is attempted murder. Honestly, Lee, I would love to change the terminology because I speak for the children, and that's how these victims think. Sex has nothing to do with it. They have no concept. So that is what I think. It's great that Florida has a death penalty.
I do too.
So tell me your knowledge of that and your thoughts.
Well, I didn't have a lot of reason being on the left coast to care much about, there's 50 states. It's hard to keep up with every state's laws on child sex crimes,
Right.
trafficking. But somehow, in the midst of fighting for the right to breathe freaking oxygen, and running convoys over the last year, when I was busy, keeping tyranny out of all the blue states, Florida did some really good stuff. So about 15 years ago, I think it was around 2010, their prior governor The first thing they did is they eliminated the statute of limitations on child sex crimes. What the
Oh.
statute of limitations is it basically says if you're the victim of a crime or anything, like maybe you got in a car accident and it's not a criminal matter, it's a civil matter, and you want to sue the other guy for your injuries and your car damage, you basically, the law doesn't want lawsuits to go on forever. Like they want to close the door and say, okay, if you don't move quickly on this and try to get justice, you're done. You can't come back 20 years later and try to sue some guy for hitting your car like 2 decades ago. So they call that the statute of limitations, and it limits the time you have to bring an action, both in criminal land and also civilly in a civil court for money damages. And in many cases, back in the day, before people like us, Lynn, started doing the work and educating law enforcement and judges and the like, legislators on repressed memory, children aren't, at age 3, 5, 7, 9, really able to go, yeah, I think I want to sue the guy who raped me. Like, children are not even considered the legal adults in the eyes of the law. So it's really, really unfair because a lot of these rules would say, if an action for rape, even if you're a child, isn't brought criminally in 3 years, you can never bring it. You could never hold the perpetrator accountable, have him go to jail. And or if you want to sue your perpetrator for the mental anguish, all the psychological damages, all the therapy you had to have for 15 years after this, too bad, so sad. If you didn't bring it within a few years of the date of the crime, you're
Oh,
out.
asinine. That's so asinine. Who would make those laws, Lise? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Lee, but I just sit there and think, are pedophiles making our laws? I mean, I just there's if there's so I have a thought about this too. Knowing that statistically, police reports, 1 in 4 little girls are tortured, is the word I'm going to use, mentally and physically tortured, 1 in 10 little boys, that's reported in the United States. And so, how many pedophiles do we have, Lee? I mean, how many pedophiles? So, who's making these crazy laws? Okay, sorry to interrupt. Go with your flow. I loved it.
No, but to your point, pedophiles are everywhere.
Yeah.
And we typically catch the black, brown, not as smart, not as educated ones that fit the Hollywood stereotype. So I'll give you an example of this mindset. When there that I don't I forget if it was Amber's Law, I don't know if it was Amber. There was some law, Megan, it's I think it was Megan. In maybe early 2000s, they had a website you could go to and you type in your address and it would show you how many convicted sex offenders were living in a however many mile radius that you set. And they had different gradations. So yellow was, the neighbor kid technically is a sex offender, but really what happened is he was 17, his girlfriend was 16, they were having sex, then he became 18, now he's technically an adult. And the girl's dad found out, never liked the boy, reported it for statutory rape, and now he's got a conviction. Is that guy really a threat to your 3-year-old on the playground? Probably not. So they gave him a lower level alert. It was like a yellow. And then, the guy who rapes adult women maybe got an orange. And then you got your hardcore pedophile who raped 400 4-year-olds, that guy like a burgundy spot. So we type in our address because my husband's like, ooh, cool new website. Like, let's check out the data around our new house. So we type in our address, and we live about 15 miles, give or take, as the crows fly from a freeway. And on the other side of the freeway, it's not as nice a neighborhood at all. And so we type in our thing, and all along the far side of the freeway, there's like a million dots, and they're bad dots. They're the burgundies, they're the sex offender, the pedophiles. And then on this side of the freeway, on the slightly nicer, higher socioeconomic side, there's some dots by the freeway, not very many, some. And as you get closer to where we live, up in the hills where the houses are yet nicer, there's zero dots, Lynn. And my husband goes, oh, praise Jesus, there's no sex offenders living near us. And I looked at him and I laughed out loud and I said, no, honey, all this means is the sex offenders living near us are the cops and lawyers and judges. And I got news for you, baby. They
Yes.
can't be arresting themselves.
That's right. That is roughly, oh,
They
that is
are in
true.
every walk of life, but I digress. So back to
Okay.
the statute of limitations.
Okay.
So Florida leads the way in 2010-ish, give or take. They get rid of their statute of limitations for child sex crimes, which means if you're a pedophile who raped a child, they no longer can only bring that criminal case against the pedophile in the first 3 years after he gets caught. They can bring it forever,
Praise
forever.
God.
It's now like murder.
Thank
You
God.
bring this criminal charge 5 decades from now, which is great.
Yes.
Okay, there's that. Then a little while ago, and I think it was when we were all busy fighting tyranny, a couple of years ago, they made rape of a child, which is defined in Florida as any penetration of vagina or anus, no matter how slight.
Okay.
So even if it's just for a nanosecond with a finger or a nanosecond with an object or a nanosecond with your hoo-ha, that is now,
Praise
basically
God.
child sexual battery in the highest degree.
Right.
And I called it that a lifer felony. And I'm like, I've been a lawyer 30 years. I've never heard that term, but I wonder if it's what it sounds like. So I go researching the statute a
Yeah.
couple of weeks ago. And sure, shooting a lifer felony is what it sounds like, Lynn. You go away for life in prison with no possibility of parole. Yeah.
Oh, yes, Lee.
Oh, actually,
Woo!
sorry. And I got that wrong. That is not for sexual rape battery. That is for lewd and lascivious. Lewd and lascivious is any, don't quote me, but it's something like any touching of breasts, buttocks, or genitalia,
There you go.
whether under the clothing or on top of the clothing. So if the 5-year-old doesn't even have boobies yet and she's wearing a swimsuit and some crazy uncle goes, "Hey, little girl, grabby, grabby," for 10 seconds, if it's for the purposes of sexual gratification of the offender, that is lewd and lascivious conduct. And that is actually the life or felony. My bad. The digital, whatever, penile object penetration of their orifices
Yeah.
is basically child rape, and that is not a life or felony. That is a freaking capital crime. These guys go to their death, not to a prison cell.
Yes.
Awesome laws. I looked at that and I'm like, oh my gosh, every child in the world should be living in Florida because they have
That's right.
the strongest laws that I know of right now on the books of any state or country.
No, but
But okay.
okay.
The laws don't mean jack effing squat if the cops won't arrest and the prosecutors won't prosecute and the juries and the judges won't come to the right decision and actually apply the law to the facts. So you can have the strongest laws on the books, but if your police ain't arresting anybody, you may as well have the worst laws on the books because it just don't matter at the end of the day. So I think a lot of Florida is doing God's work. I know a lot of good cops down there, a lot of feds, a lot of state guys with badges. A lot of people in the industry. I think DeSantis, I think their former AG, Ashley Moody, I don't know their new one. She was just made a senator last week or so. But they were tough on crime. Ashley Moody, the attorney general down there in particular, was a huge opponent of sex trafficking, human trafficking. And I was actually present at Mar-a-Lago the first week of December when she gave a speech at an
Wow.
anti-trafficking nonprofit's annual gala.
Oh.
700 people packed into the room at Mar-a-Lago, and she literally talked about how tough they were on crime, including they have rolled out their own state law equivalent of the National Polaris Human Trafficking Hotline, where if you're in Florida and you see a suspected trafficking situation, you can call their state hotline because the national hotline under Biden was useless, although we're
Yeah.
fixing that now. But I mean, I heard her speech and I'm like, dude, two thumbs up, you go, girl. But Florida's a big state. And there's a lot of good old boys from the South down there. And they have some backwoods, draconian, not even last century, but like 3 centuries ago, judges and cops on the payroll. And it's frightening. And this one case that you had wanted me to sort of put a light on today is
Yes.
exhibit A in that problem. And it's a hell of a problem. And I got to tell you right now, Florida better get on top of it. And if they don't want to do it and they don't get out in front of it, I will come light it up in the state of Florida until the lawmakers and all of the people who are in control and in power in that state understand that we ain't playing. Human trafficking is a problem. This is not something you use when you're stumping for your next campaign election. You better make good on the promises you made to your people. And if you don't, the soccer moms of the world are going to be up your you know what around the corner. And it is high time that we start holding these politicians' promises
That's
accountable.
right.
It needs to actually be taken seriously. And I think parts of Florida are doing it right. And I know firsthand that parts of Florida are effing it up 8 ways to Sunday. Pardon my French, but I am lit about the way this one case has gone.
Well, yeah. And you know, Lee, I think as you get continue telling us about the case, I believe that what you're doing is the role model for the other states because, Lee, I can't tell you how many people I'm hearing from that the law enforcement is involved in the trafficking, that the judicial system, they're involved in the trafficking. I'm now calling CPS, Child Pedophile Services, because they are so involved, you know? And you talked about in the other countries how you couldn't take them to this, you know, safe places and the little girls couldn't tug on the law enforcement officer's shirt to get help. I think that this is a nationwide problem that we have. And you found places in Florida, but I'm hearing it all across the country. So I think you're doing God's work in setting a precedence of how can people in each state fight this? So tell us about your case and what you're discovering with law enforcement and the judicial system.
Well, as you might imagine, I get a lot of people talking to me about sad scenarios because they're very prevalent. I mean, 40 million people currently enslaved. One out of two women by the time they're an adult are, have experienced an act of sexual violence. And I think it's one in four have experienced full-on completed rape. I mean, this is a massive problem.
That
So
is.
next, do me a favor, if you're a listener, next time you're in church or the movie theater or standing at an amusement park, start counting heads.
That's right.
One, two, they've experienced an actual act of sexual violence. One, two, three, four, they've been raped or darn near completed rape. Just start doing the math. It is sad
I
and
say the
frightening.
same thing. It is, it's awful.
You've got to make it real to you because once it's real to you and it lays on your heart, that's what gets us educated and better yet, empowered to actually clean up our own communities. And there's so much that the average citizen can do. But yeah, I get a lot of sad stories coming my way. And a while back now, I heard about this little girl, and I'll give you the nutshell version. It's a 10-year saga at this point, but I'll try to make it be the elevator version. 4 years old. Well, let me backtrack. Her mom, good Christian woman, works at Fortune 500 company, smart but naive. She's not like you and me, and she doesn't train law enforcement on sex trafficking. So she had no idea that this dirty underworld even existed. So mom marries dad, dad's a cop. And when the girl is about 17 months old, they're divorced because the dad was cheating, and the dad was bringing the mom STDs, like really gnarly STDs that were awful that the mom was having to deal with. So they get divorced, go their separate ways. But the mom, to her credit, wanted her child to know her dad. I'm sure in hindsight, she would make a different decision there, but she didn't know what she didn't know. So he had already had a kid, I think, with somebody he was having a relationship while he was dating the girl's mom, and abandoned that kid, just washed his hands of it. And the mom was like, "Well, I don't want that to happen to my daughter. I want her to know her dad." So the mom was very nice. The dad just walked away. The mom had 100% sole custody of the daughter at this point, which is a very important point I'm going to come back to in a minute. And notwithstanding that, the dad would come into the town in Michigan where they all lived every 2 weeks for his weekend with the kid, pick up the toddler daughter, and go to his mother's house, who also had a house in that town or a neighboring town. And unbeknownst to the girl's mother, I think, at that point, her husband or ex-husband's mother's husband, new husband, was a convicted sex offender who was already on the Michigan State Registry for having raped repeatedly, orally and vaginally, his wheelchair-bound, brain-injured physical therapy patient in the child's basement. He has a
Evil.
predilection for basements, apparently. For 2 years. So a nurse walks in, sees his tongue down this 15-year-old wheelchair-bound girl's throat, reports it, they catch the guy, they do an interview, the detective's with him, where he completely confesses to it. He's like, And during the interview, he explains that the girl wore short shorts to one of her appointments 2 years prior when the girl was probably about 13, and that he became so aroused that he was inspired to put his penis into her vagina, and that because he was so aroused, he knew it wasn't going to last long, and apparently it didn't. And then he pulled out and cleaned up the sperm with a hanky. Those are all direct quotes. I'm giving you direct quotes from the detective's report after the guy confessed. So it is indisputable that this guy is a child rapist,
That's
and
right.
he confessed to it. And he's on the sex offender registry. So that is this girl's paternal step grandfather. It is her biological dad's mom's new husband. And daddy, despite the fact that he's a cop, in his wisdom, decides that it would be a brilliant idea to every 2 weeks take his toddler preschool age daughter over to the convicted sex offender's house. Okay, so even if you give him a pass on everything else, doesn't that kind of make you go, weird? Most cops keep their kids, whether it's your kid or any other kid, the hell away from sex offenders, but not this charmer. So anyway, so the dad's doing this. He's a real piece of work. The dad's doing this for a period of years, and of course, you know, when the parents get divorced, the kid's only like a year old. She can't really talk. But at age 4 and a half, she gets old enough to string a sentence together coherently, and she discloses the abuse to mom. That step grandpa and dad are abusing her whenever she goes into the sex offender's basement at step grandpa's house, where dad takes her every 2 weekends for his quality time with her. And the mother's horrified and goes racing off to, I don't know, whatever local policing jurisdiction was in her city and county and reports it. And initially, all of the officers are like, oh, that's horrible. They make all the right noises. Oh, we're going to investigate. And then it just dies on the vine. But daddy is himself a good old boy cop in that same area, or he was recently. So then the mom's very persistent. She flips it to a number of different federal and state law enforcement agencies. Same result. Oh, this is awful. Crickets. Finally, she gets the attention of the Michigan State Attorney General's office, Dana Nessel. And Dana Nessel brings the child in. Parades the mother and child. The child's afraid to speak about it. Parades her, apparently. I just learned this last, yeah, recently. Parades the kid and the mom around the office. Oh, we're going to get justice for you, little girl. This is awful. You've got a team on your side. Gives the girl a little pink piece of stationery in a book that basically says, dear kid's name, your strength and courage are an inspiration, I think was the quote. Stay strong and true to yourself, little girl, on pink stationery, handwritten by the state attorney general. So they assign a couple of assistant attorney generals to work on the case, a couple of their forensic law enforcement who work for the AG's office to investigate the case. And they are all horrified. And at some point around this time, in conjunction with the Michigan State Police, a warrant finally issues. That's been a couple of years. They
Oh,
finally get a warrant to issue.
boy.
Michigan State Police execute the warrant on a weekend that dad was supposed to be in town for time sharing with the girl. And they go into the guy's house and they go into the sex offender's basement where the little girl had said that the guys would abuse her, that they would use pieces of the chess set to penetrate her. And lo and behold, they find the eagle statue in the basement just where the little girl said it was. They find the chess set just where the little girl said it was. And they also find, they go scanning the carpet with their lights, they also find not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six or seven, I believe it was, different seminal fluid stained areas of the carpet. So they do what cops do. They cut out the, and if you have that up, if you
I
go to the
do.
bottom of the
Yes, I
page,
do. I
pages.
do.
So I can show you what this looks like. They cut out the go. So the child abuse case right there. And if you go all the way to the bottom, we've got the crime scene photos from the execute.
By
There
the
it is.
way, this is the
That's the
stepfather.
convicted sex offender
That's
grandpa. You
right.
got it.
There we go. Say his name, Larry Orr.
That's all
Okay.
that. So,
Here's
and
the
then
pictures,
you.
Lee.
Yeah, so this is the basement. And if you zoom in the back right, you can see there's a little girl dolly. You can see there's a chalkboard. And you can see in this photo, you've got literally right around the girl's little single bed, all tricked out like little girl FAO Schwartz toy room, right? Central.
Right.
You've got these evidence markers. And they found a few. There wasn't just these two. I think the next photo has a few more. Yeah, more seminal fluid stains there. And they send the pieces of carpet off to the lab. And lo and behold, well, and they try to get a buccal swab from the men that day. A buccal swab is where they stick the Q-tip in your mouth so they can match your DNA to whatever they're seeing in the real world. And both of the men decline. But you know, it's not the sex offender's already been through the system, so he knows better. And daddy's a cop, so he knows better. So the attorney for them is who's on site is like, no, we're not doing that voluntarily. So Michigan State Police has to go running back to the judge to get an order to swab their mouths, which they get. And at this point, the police report said the dad was initially like antagonistic, belligerent, like giving them grief, like, oh, don't you know this has already been investigated and nothing was found? And the Michigan State Police are like, sir, you need to like basically let us do our job. And eventually, when he realizes he can't hold off the execution of the warrant by just puffing up his little peacock chest, then
Right.
he gets frantic, is the word that was used in the detective's report. Biological father becomes frantic and starts repeatedly interrupting the search and saying, "I need to get my personal belongings," because he had come for the weekend. So I can't believe they did this. They interrupt the search, they let this guy collect his toothbrush, all his personal stuff, his hygiene kit, and leave. So he leaves the sex offender's house. Now, and they're like, "Where are you going? You were supposed to be here for the weekend, to celebrate your birthday with your daughter." And he's like, "Yeah, I gotta go." So he goes running back to Detroit International Airport.
How could they
So,
be stupid enough to let him leave, Lee? Go ahead with your story. I just, okay.
yeah. Well, they didn't have an arrest warrant for him. This was just the search
Okay.
warrant. They
Okay.
didn't have any hardcore forensic evidence yet, right?
Okay,
So
right.
they did get, during the hours this was going on, they did get a different judge to say, yeah, you can force these men to let them swab your mouth. So now the dad's at Detroit International, and they talked to dad's attorney, and they're like, "Hey, we need your guy to give up his DNA." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, attorney Hackett was his name." He says something like, "Oh yeah, he's already on an American Airlines flight, and they've already pulled away from the gate." So the cops are like, "But is he really? And did it really?" So luckily, they didn't take the attorney's word for it. They go running off as well to Detroit International, and lo and behold, the American Airlines flight is still at the mother freaking gate. So they pull the guy out of his attempted jackrabbiting down to Florida, where he was now living with his mistress that he's in the process of marrying, that he cheated on the girl's mom with. They yank him off that Florida-bound AA flight, and they swab his mouth. And so now they've got the DNA from the men's mouths. They have the carpet samples. They send all that jazz after the search warrant's done. They send it off to the Michigan State Police Forensic Lab. And don't you know, a month or a couple months later, it comes back. And what they found is that one of the seminal fluid stains, what they said was that it was, quote, "at least 160 septillion times more likely if it," meaning the stain, "originated from the father," although they used his real name there, "if it originated from the father, then if it originated from any other unknown, unrelated contributors." Basically,
Huge.
it's an open and shut case. 160
That's
septillion,
right. That's right.
it
DNA.
is 24 zeros
DNA.
after the number. If you go back to my website, it is an amazing amount of zeros. Like, it'll make your head spin.
Yes.
160 septillion. And the step grandfather's, if you go up, it's way up. It's kind of at the top of the page. Further, 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 way, way, way up, way up, way up. There. You just pat. No, a little baby further up, a little further up. There it is in bold. 100. That is what 160 septillion in the middle of that second paragraph
Yeah.
bolded looks like. That
See it.
is astronomical DNA forensic evidence right there. And the step grandpa's fluids came back at least 320 quadrillion times more likely if it originated from the step grandpa than from any other unknown, unrelated contributors. And some of the other stains came back at, like, I forget, I think it was 15 trillion, 6.1 quadrillion, 10 billion. I mean, this is not flimsy
Even say
evidence.
those words, yeah. This is like open shut to any normal American, okay,
Yeah,
or anywhere nationally, period.
you could, with the brains of a monkey as a prosecutor in any of the big cities, take this evidence in front of a jury, which has an average reading level comprehension understanding of third grade, and notwithstanding all that, put that evidence on and get a verdict if you're remotely decent at your job. But anyway, so based on the strength of the forensics, the cops go back to the judge in Michigan and say, "We need an arrest warrant." Arrest warrants issued for the men. Step grandpa's still living in Michigan. He's taken down there, but daddy is now back in Jacksonville, Florida. So I believe it was Jacksonville sheriffs that took him down on the arrest warrant. And pursuant to that warrant, they also had the ability to strip him of his electronic devices. So they do. And then the evidence ends up, even though he was, arrested in Jacksonville, DeSantis extradites him back up to Michigan for the trial and processing up there. The judge on the case, where the men go before her for a bail bond hearing to set bail, actually says on the record something like, "I've been a sitting judge for over 20 years. I've never denied bail or bond, but if ever there were a case for it, this is it." And she went on to cite the strength of the evidence. So she denies bail and bond. So now the men are being held in jail. They can't even post a bond out of
That's
jail.
good.
Yeah, and dad's a cop, so he's being held in solitary for a couple months. During that time, they start looking at his devices. And two different law enforcement officers subsequently testified under oath that they found, and you can go back to the website at this point with those big old quotes that were right below that place you were at before. They found, there it is. We found pictures, naked pictures of both boys and girls that appeared to be possibly prepubescent, graphs, people's images that indicated the sexual assault of what appeared to be children. And these last two are the real zingers.
Right.
Very young children involved in sexual acts with adults, and very young children appearing to be tortured and/or in bondage.
That's right. That's what they do. Damn it. Okay, sorry.
So, yeah, they also testified, these law enforcement officers did, at least one of them did, that there were more than 10,000 images.
Wait.
They don't know how many involved kids. They weren't able to work their way through all of the images because right around the time that they were reviewing them, one of the many people who was working this case at the Michigan AG's office, one of the assistant attorney generals, was accused of inappropriate conduct because, in a completely unrelated matter, he apparently fell in love with the rape victim, an adult rape victim. And that's considered obviously unethical. You're not supposed to date the victims. So he was brought, he resigned. And then I think they went after his law license and he may have given it up or been disbarred. So based on all of that, this charming Dana Nessel, who had used this kid as a freaking poster child, parading her around in a dog and pony show around the office and saying, "Oh, little girl, you've got a team behind you now," handwriting her a note saying, "Stay strong, you're an inspiration and a courage to all of us." Yeah, Dana Nessel just decides to throw the damn baby out with the bathwater and drop the freaking case.
Dropped
She
it.
actually issued, yeah, she issued, I don't know if I have it up, she issued an order to one of the cops that ordered him to freeze his work when he was analyzing the CSAM stuff, the child sexual abusive material that was found on the dad's electronic devices, to freeze it. And then some time went by. The guy said in his deposition something like, "We were just getting ready to write a report when the other guy's misconduct came to light, and that's when the order came down to freeze the work." And a few months went by, and then I don't know who it was. I think it was Michigan State Police and the AG's office said to not do anything further with it. And then another few months went by, and my detective command staff said, "If this case isn't going forward, if the AG's not going to prosecute it," obviously they had to let the guys out of jail, "but the AG's not going to prosecute it, then you should just trash the evidence." And then he went on to explain that when he said the word trash it, it didn't mean actually destroy it. It meant give the electronic devices back to dad.
What? What?
Yeah. Isn't that charming? Now, mind you,
What do you mean?
around the same time, daddy is now a free agent.
Oh,
Daddy's
yeah.
been let out of jail, so he's technically a free man because they never actually finished the freaking case. Thank you, Dana Nessel. So
Right.
he goes back down to Florida, right? And he gets a number of jobs. He works Gainesville Police Department, which is in the same town and county that he eventually moves the family law judges to give him back sole physical custody of his daughter. And he also works as a Miami captain of the ATB, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Beverage Company. And then he ends up, because you just can't make this shit up, pardon my French, he ends up as the Duval County School Police Officer.
Oh my gosh, she's with the children.
Now,
Holy, oh,
I mean, that's,
every parent should know that and get their kid out. They've got a pedophile. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Okay.
he wasn't convicted, but yeah, an alleged
Okay.
accused pedophile. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
So, and I think he started working for Duval probably a good 5 or 6 years ago. In the middle of his Duval County policing, he gets arrested. He has to go up to Michigan, spend a few months in jail. They find all this stuff on his devices that is unequivocal. You could throw the little girl's case out entirely. You've got him dead to rights on possession of you know what,
Right.
right? So I do not understand this. Like, I used to represent boards. Like, the city of West Covina was a client of mine. Like, we gave legal advice to entities, right? So the school boards usually have their own attorney to make sure that, they're
Yeah,
doing
they
things
do.
right.
Yeah, they
So
do.
Duval County has him, as a school police officer. He gets arrested, extradited by DeSantis, held in jail on very solid evidence. Notwithstanding that, because of unrelated prosecutorial misconduct, he ends up a free man. He goes back to Duval County, gets a different job working for them for slightly lower pay, but they put him back on his payroll as a school police, whatever. And then
Oh.
They actually elevate him and promote him to being the acting police chief of the schools in that area. I'm like, oh my freaking gosh. So you will be happy to know that apparently some of the parents, or I don't know who, it wasn't me. I wasn't really involved in the case, but some other group down in Florida, I forget their name, got wind of this, and they did a little name and shame on it. But eventually, this last summer, 2024, the school board, in their wisdom, finally decided that maybe it wasn't the best idea to have this guy on their payroll, and they did not renew his contract.
Oh
So
my
yeah,
God.
there's that. But then we got a real problem because the dad moved for sole physical custody of the kid who accused him of raping her. And that case goes to be heard. He moves for the motion in Alachua County Family Law Justice Center. The first judge who catches the case is a man by the name presiding judge of the courthouse, mind you. Very, very old boy, right?
Yeah.
Good guy, as you'll understand. And I say that tongue in cheek. Good boy there. His name's Honorable James P. Nylon, 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 if you want to look him up. So he catches this case and he does a number of very unusual rulings, Lynn. One of the first things he does is causes all of the trauma-informed therapists, including people who were the associate dean at University of Michigan Ann Arbor and taught forensic child interviewing and how to handle sex abuse survivor cases. Yeah, he's kind of a subject matter expert. All of these amazing therapists that the mom has gotten the kid to handle all the trauma, those are now gone. Can't have those people on the case. And instead, he puts a real charming woman by the name of Dr. Tracy Stolberg, Stulberg, on the case. And he has, as I understand it, I think the woman was supposed to be wearing three different hats. She was supposed to be the kid's therapist, the mom's therapist, and the reunification therapist for the dad to be reunified with the girl eventually. And then the judge.
Conflicts of interest. I mean, this is just nonsense. Okay, I'm listening.
Yeah, a third grader could tell you that's a conflict of interest.
Right.
So, and you should Google, if you're listening to this, go Google Dr. Tracy Stolberg, Stulberg. Check out her Yelp reviews in Michigan. They're like basically 99% one star, and they're frightening. Like, I would never put a kid anywhere within a 1,000 mile radius of this chick or more. So this poor child is now being ordered to see this marriage family child counselor, Tracy Stolberg. And he orders the Judge James P. Nylon, the Honorable James Nylon, orders all of the therapists working on the case, including Tracy Stolberg, to not allow discussion of past child sexual abuse. So the kid is not allowed to talk now in therapy. And I think he did something similar with the mom, where the mom's not supposed to discuss the therapy with the kid or the abuse. So the poor kid has no outlet, but she's very eloquent. She's very strong, like you and I are. So she starts trying to say something about her dad abusing her in session. And most of the therapists are like, yeah, we can't talk about that. But Stolberg's cut from a different cloth entirely. Stolberg literally goes, no, little girl, no. Your truth is your daddy never hurt you.
What? What is she being
Yeah,
paid off? I mean,
he's
I don't
being
know. I just.
possibly re-brainwashed, like North Korea, freaking fascist communist re-education camp, forcibly brainwashed as a freaking 8-year-old or whatever the hell old she is at the time.
Oh my gosh, Lee.
I am telling you, this judging is like freaking dark ages shit. Pardon my French. I am lit.
It
So
is.
within a couple of months, not a shocker, the child is now freaking suicidal. She tells Dr. Deborah Day from Winter Park, Florida, who has also been assigned by Judge James Nylon to ride herd on the 20 other therapists that have had their hands in and out of the case for all the time. She actually tells Dr. Deborah Day, quote, I want to die, and quote, I'm going to ask my mother to kill me so I can start a new life, end
Oh.
quote. And that she goes to the bathroom every night and prays for this. She's in
Oh,
pray. Yeah,
Lord.
that is
Oh.
what Judge James Nylon's aberrated orders caused in rapid succession, right? So now we've got a suicidal 9-year-old. And where was I in the story? What else did the judge do? The judge ordered on the record during a hearing with another therapist, Dr. Fitzsimmons, a woman. And Fitzsimmons is like, you know, Your Honor, the child's trying to talk about it. I kind of feel like as a mandated reporter. And the judge is like, oh, yeah. So basically, the therapist is asking whether she should report the child abuse, because as a doctor, as a therapist, as a teacher, as a cop, you're as a lawyer in many cases, in
Right.
most states, you're mandated reporters.
Right.
And in Florida, again, they have a great law. If you're an adult and you suspect child abuse, you have a reasonable good cause to suspect child abuse or sexual abuse, everyone is a mandated reporter. You don't have to be one of the helping professions. Everyone. You could be an unemployed homeless janitor on the street. And if you think that that guy is sexually abusing his daughter because of something you just saw, you have to report. So, anyway, this judge tells Dr. Fitzsimmons on the record, no, this is really important. Let me find it. And he starts paging through his earlier orders on the case. And then he reads to her the order that prohibits therapists from talking. He goes, here it is. It says the therapist is basically ordered to not let the child talk about past child sexual abuse. So that's what I would tell you, Dr. Fitzsimmons, in response to your question about this, is that I think it's appropriate for you to not inform Michigan authorities. I believe that was the direct quote or something darn close to it. And then he goes, okay. And Fitzsimmons goes, yeah, okay. And he goes, okay. And she's like, yeah, of course, okay. Like he was intimidating her from what I saw in the transcript on the record. So I
Right.
don't know if this doctor ever reported or not. I doubt. So now this kid's suicidal. He's ordered all the therapists to not let the child talk. Some of the bad therapists are actively brainwashing and re-educating her until she becomes super suicidal. Notwithstanding all of that, the kid is brought into chambers. I think it was on a Zoom because it was during the pandemic on December 7th of 2020. And the judge is like, so little girl, she's now 9 years old, tell me about your parents. And the little kid is like laser focused. Like when you read this hour-long transcript, you would be so impressed with her. She's like, yeah, so about my dad. And he goes, oh yeah, how do your parents handle Christmas? Or something like that. Like red herring, red herring. Every time the girl's trying to actually make a point about the dad, he's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Let's take a 20-minute tangent on this topic. So finally, at the end of like, I don't know, like pages and pages of transcript, the kid's like, yeah, so about my dad.
Good for
And
her,
she's,
lady.
yeah, the kid, the 9-year-old is literally having to force her point with this, I don't know, 50,
Judge.
60-year-old judge. She's like, about my dad. And then she says something like, he touched me in my private places and it felt uncomfortable. And then she went on to say, basically, he seems like a really nice man to other people, but he's not that way with me. And then she says, she starts talking about the fact that she's suicidal. She said something about wanting to die. The judge sort of misdirected her, like, oh, how did you come to that? And she's like, well, when I'm with my dad, I wanted to die. But that conversation, as I recall, started when she was talking about Dr. Tracy Stolberg. And what she said about that is, yeah, I go into therapy and I try to say my truth. And she says, no, your truth is that it didn't happen. And she's like, and I feel really bad or something like that. And the judge goes, oh, is that what happens? I'm so sorry. And she goes, yeah. And it makes me feel worthless because I'm trying to say something and she won't let me. That is how articulate this darn child was at age 9. And then the judge goes, oh, well, I'm sorry you're feeling that way today, little whatever her name is. Anything else? Like, so he's sitting there. Anybody with a brain, even if you were a good old boy, would be like, okay, maybe I made a misstep by not letting the therapist talk to the kid about abuse. She's pretty spun. She's telling you she wants to die. She's saying she feels worthless because my therapist is acting on my orders, is not letting her speak. Maybe I should recalibrate here. No. One of the other things she does on the record during that hearing in December 7th of 2020 is she's like, yeah, about my dad. Sometimes he makes me take off my clothes and he videotapes me with his cell phone dancing. So I looked up the Florida statute on manufacture of child pornography, and I am here to tell you that I'm not a Florida prosecutor, but based on those facts and based on what I saw the law to be in Florida, if I were still a prosecutor prosecuting somebody prosecuting a felony case, I don't think I'd have a darn problem at all making that case. Now, what does this judge do? He seals the transcript. I'm willing to bet you he never reported, even though judges are mandated reporters. I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe he followed the law. Or there are some exceptions for judges where they don't have to report if the case is already known or if this, that, or the third happened. So maybe he had some reason why he didn't report, or maybe he did report. I don't know. But I'm guessing based on the fact that the judge sealed the transcript so that nobody could see that this child was now suicidal after his order to not let the kid talk to anybody about the abuse. And the fact that they just sealed a transcript where the child on the freaking record admitted that her dad was making her make basically child pornography.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, I have a lot to say about this judge. Anyway, I've said most of it. So then his final action before he retires, his final gift to the world, is the father's rights attorney that the dad has puts a motion in front of the court seeking to hold the girl's mom in contempt of court. He entertains something like a 2-week trial where they're taking witness testimony on whether the non-offending innocent parent should be held in contempt of court. And
Oh.
they do this big old song and dance during the month of December or somewhere around there of 2020. And on his final day on the bench, the Honorable James P. Nylon, Nylon, issues a 91 paragraph order holding the mother in contempt of court for what you might ask? Well, for the crime of having gotten her child therapy after her kid became suicidal, after the judge's orders disallowed the child from discussing her abuse, and for the audacious act of having cooperated with the Michigan State Attorney General and Michigan State Police investigation that yielded forensic evidence, including the father's seminal fluid in the sex offender's basement, somewhere near the child's bed, that was adjudged by the Michigan State Police forensics lab to be, quote, at least 160 septillion times more likely if it originated from the father than from any other unknown, unrelated contributor on the planet. And then he didn't just hold the mother in contempt, he fined her $237,629.21 and bankrupted the mother 2 days later.
How can they do this, Lee? How can one man, I mean, not have a child rape victim talk to a therapist, say that the mom can't go to state law enforcement, cooperate with them? How can one man make such ridiculous, absurd, asinine rulings and they actually hold up and she's got, I mean, help me understand.
Well, it gets a little worse. So this one man, because he was retiring, I think, if I'm not mistaken on the facts, don't quote me, the case went into a blind lottery and was reassigned to maybe a decent judge or certainly not as odd of a judge. I'll use that adjective. And then Judge Nylon assigned it to his good buddy, his colleague, Judge Robert K. Grobe, Groebe. And Judge Grobe got the case, and Judge Grobe admitted on the record in August of 2024 during a hearing on this case right before the child custody trial, because dad, of course, is moving the court to get 100% custody of his kid back. Judge Grobe admitted when they were discussing whether any of the sexual abuse evidence was going to come into play in that setting, he admitted when Jane Dar over here, let me see. There's the give me 1 second here. Yeah, he made some really interesting rulings, Lynn. He said that, here it is. He said, actually, so Judge Robert K. Grobe admitted, actually, I discussed with Judge Nylon, the prior charming judge, prior to him retiring, when he gave me this case. He admits Judge Nylon, hand carry, gave him the case. When he gave me this case, his impressions, meaning Judge Nylon's impressions of that evidence. Fascinating. So then he goes on to say, he just doubles down on Judge Nylon's position that he was 100% agreeing with Judge Nylon that the alleged sexual abuse evidence was not worthy and not going to come in. He said, there's no way, this is Judge Robert Grobe now talking about Nylon's prior impression of the evidence of sexual abuse of the child. There's no way that I'm going to allow those statements into evidence. And there's no way that I'm going to allow the alleged sexual molestation. Hello? Anybody check out those crime scene photos in the Michigan State Police Forensic Lab? No way I'm going to allow that to come into evidence. I'm not going to allow that to become a feature of this trial. Judge Nylon has already found it's unreliable. It is not going to be admissible. I am carrying that order on in this trial. I am going to 100% agree. There's where he doubles down with his buddy Nylon. I am going to 100% agree with Judge Nylon in that ruling. So then he wiped the decks. He said, none of the abuse evidence is coming in. And then it gets really good. Because he goes one step further. And he says, so the dad, the mom's attorney is like, okay, well, Your Honor, thanks for the ruling on that. Now we've got this motion pending to let the little girl speak at the custody ruling as to which parent she wants to be with. And mind you, when she had that charming dialogue with Judge James Nylon, where she fought her corner pretty darn well, like
Yeah.
very coherently said, "Dad made me take off my clothes and videotape me with his cell phone dancing. By the way, the therapist you assigned is overriding my truth and saying, no, your truth is this never happened, and that makes me feel worthless. And by the way, I feel like I want to die." Like, she fought her corner as hard as I have ever seen any third grader anywhere in the world fight.
Yeah.
So that's how intelligent she was at age 9, and coherent and lucid and eloquent. So this charmer, Judge Grobe, says in August of last year that even though she's 14 years old almost now, she can't testify about which parent she wants to live with. He literally says, they're going back and forth on the record, and he literally admits, Judge Grobe admits, the child seemed pretty lucid and pretty intelligent at age 9 when he reviewed the evidence of the child speaking to his predecessor. And the attorney, the mom's attorney, goes, "Yeah, and now she's 4 years older." And the judge is like, "Yeah, she is 4 years older and more mature." And then he goes on to say that not only is she intelligent and lucid, it's not like we're talking about a 5-year-old here. She absolutely, at this age, knows the difference between fiction and reality and a truth and a lie. I forget the exact facts, but that's the gist of it. And then he says, after admitting that she meets the threshold determination in the state of Florida for being mature enough to testify, he says, "But that doesn't mean I'm going to let her testify." So then there's another, like, I don't know how many pages of transcript where they're like going back and forth. And the judge says that it, quote, terrifies him that he might be doing something destructive to a child
Oh
by
my.
letting them participate directly in the process. And I'm like, are you freaking shittinging me right now? The judge.
Apparently she survived. I mean, my gosh.
The child was pretty resilient. She survived the grandpa, the convicted sex offender, grandpa offender's basement, and daddy. She
That's
survived Judge Nylon's aberrated rulings that shut her down every time she tried to have therapy about her abuse. She survived so well that she was able to articulate the damage that those rulings were doing to Judge Nylon in third grade. And you think that 2 minutes on the damn stand saying, "I want to live with mom or dad," is beyond her emotional, resilience level? Are you freaking crazy? So, oh my gosh. So then it gets worse. He says that he is loath, loath to allow the child to testify because he's terrified it might be doing something destructive to them. And then he admits on the record during this hearing in August of 2024, check this out, that he has been a sitting, quote, family law judge for almost 15 years now, and that he has had, quote, hundreds of people requesting that their minor child be granted a voice in the custody proceedings, but that he had only allowed a minor child to testify on either two or three occasions out of 15 years because the Honorable Judge Robert K. Grobe does not want the child to, quote, think that they're the ones driving the train here.
That's appalling. I mean, that's just, oh Lee, I'm
I
trying to
know.
find words for this. That is so ludicrous. I just, and so he's been over hundreds of children who weren't able to speak what their needs were. I just find it appalling, absolutely appalling.
Yeah, I mean, and this is, by the way, the mom's attorney did it on this point anyway, did a fairly good job. He's like, "Well, Your Honor, there was a recent appellate court Florida state case in May of this year, 4 months ago, prior to the August ruling, in May of 2024, Harrell versus Friend, Harrell versus Friend, just like it sounds, that said children are relevant, that the child's opinion is relevant." And goes on to say that basically, if they have the emotional maturity and the ability to speak coherently, they should be allowed to testify in modification of child custody proceedings because it's their life. Hello.
Right, that's
So
right.
just, I'm not going to follow that law. I'm just going to do my own thing and continue to just muzzle every child who comes through my family law court and not allow them to have a voice about which parent they think they might want to spend their lives with. Like, are you high, Judge Grobe? If I came along to you right now and was like, "I'm going to decide where you're going to spend the next 4 years or 8 years of your life, and you don't get a voice. No, you
Yeah.
can't spend it with your wife and kids. I think it's more important that you spend it with your crazy uncle. You're just going to go live with him now. Bye-bye." How would you feel?
Yeah.
How dare you
Yeah.
insert
Oh, that's good, Lee.
your wisdom over the top of the darn kid when the kid is almost in high school? She's not two. Ugh. Anyway, so that goes on. So now we've got the first judge Muzzled the mom, didn't allow the mom to speak out about anything. Didn't allow the mom to talk to, therapists, didn't allow the mom to talk to the cops, held her in contempt for having actually cooperated with the cops, doesn't allow the child to speak in therapy. And now we've got the new judge who's following Judge Nylon's orders because, Judge Nylon gave him his impressions of the case before he retired. And now we got the new judge going, yeah, you don't get a voice and we're not going to allow any of the abuse investigations. And I have never seen in my life, including working in Cambodia and Thailand,
Yeah.
a effective gagging and silencing and muzzling of any rape survivor of any age. And this kid was 4 and 9 and now 13 and a half years old. So push comes to shove, the child custody trial goes to be heard on January 6th, a couple weeks ago, 2025, in front of the charming Honorable Judge Robert K. Grobe. And he allows all day Monday the father to put on the father's evidence as to why he should get 100% custody of the kid. And then on Tuesday morning, he just summarily rules without the mother putting on her case, apparently because the mother's attorney made a motion to dismiss, saying the father had not met his burden or some such. I don't really know. I wasn't inside the court. And the judge is like, yeah, I don't think the father's met his burden to be granted 100% custody, so I'm going to deny the father's motion. Well, now that means the mom won the motion, technically, meaning the mother can't appeal anything. Very clever, very clever. Got to give him props for that.
Oh.
And then, yeah, so now the dad doesn't get 100%. Okay. And now, because there's no motions pending in front of the court, it just reverts to the earlier judge's custody thing that he did with the parents, where it's 50-50 unsupervised visitation
Oh.
every long weekend and all summer. With basically all summer, with the dad starting immediately, was the ruling apparently he made at 9 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. Now, mind you, I did a little press conference on the steps of the Alachua County Family Courthouse from 10 to noon during the morning part of when they were in trial, because frankly, I felt like the state of Florida and the state lawmakers deserved to know about these aberrated rulings and what had gone on here. And if you're going to say that you're tough on crime and you're blazing away on human trafficking and sexual violence, you need to know that this is what your judges in backwoods Alachua County are doing, because that is not in keeping in any way, shape, or form. Not letting kids talk about therapy and abuse, not letting them talk about their abuse to their therapist, not letting them talk it to the abuse about the mother. Get the dang hell out of the parent-child relationship. How dare you, as a judge, insert yourself in the middle of a sacrosanct, sacred doctor patient, a therapist patient, or a mother-child relationship.
That's right.
That's BS straight out of the 1700s or the dark ages right there. So I felt like the world deserved to know what was going on because clearly everybody else had been gagged on the case, but not me. So I let it fly. I'm pretty sure the judge probably wasn't real happy about that, but I don't care. Here's the thing. We had a guy come up during the press conference and approach some of the men who were working AV, audio viz on it. And they're like, oh, where are the banners? Because I actually printed up banners with some of the quotes about what they found on the dad's devices
Yeah.
and the forensic lab report.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, where are the banners? And the men were like, yeah, that it's all over. I don't know where they are. And the guy's like, well, I don't know if he was like second chair counsel for the dad. He was somehow connected to the dad's side, though. He's like, if you're really wanting to help the mom, this is going to backfire because Gainesville's a really small town and the judge isn't going to be happy with you. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm counting on.
You
So
can go.
here's the thing, though. Here's the beautiful thing. First of all, I don't give a rat's behind what the dad's attorneys think. They're batting for the dark side in my book. But and really, like, out of the goodness of your heart, you're going to help the mother make a better case when you're counsel for the dad. I don't think so, Scooter. But here's the really interesting thing. Why would the judge be upset about me shouting from the rooftops his rulings if he was proud of them? If they think they've done nothing freaking wrong, if they think they are blazing away for child victims that come through their courthouse, they should be thanking me for giving voice to their rulings out in the public square, shouldn't they?
That's right.
Set, as the daddy's attorney or whoever he was seemed to indicate, then maybe, just maybe, it's because they know that they've been doing stuff that isn't really so above board or so in keeping with modern practices of how we handle child sexual assault victims in custody proceedings and in court.
Okay.
So that's where it stands. And now the first visitation was supposed to be Martin Luther King weekend, but it's now, I think, allegedly going to be February 15th, which is President's Day, which is just frightening to think about this girl going back for 5 days, 4 nights unsupervised with her dad.
I just, from my past experience, I can take quite a bit of educated guesses about what is going to be happening during that time. I do not know, but I can take educated guesses. I'm just sick at heart.
Well, the dad's attorney, because they just don't know when to leave well enough alone. I heard through the grapevine, I haven't really seen it, but they put in a motion before the court yesterday where they were asking for an expedited adjudication of how to handle the time sharing, because I think the mom's camp had suggested a handoff at a sheriff's office parking lot, which is standard practice. That way, no parent goes cray cray, right? And the dad was like, no, we can't have that because I don't trust mom to not do something with the Jacksonville sheriff. So I'm like, okay. So he's like wanting like a Starbucks, like a no name out of the way Starbucks or McDonald's or something, I gather. I don't know. Don't quote me on this. And then, excuse me, he also put a motion before the court, or as part of that motion, that he basically wanted an order ordering the mother to basically not do any more three ring circuses. Now, the mom did not ask me to stand in the public square in front of the courthouse and do this. Like, I got wind of this case. I thought it was bullpucky, and this is what I do. You know,
Right.
a governor makes a bad order, I grab my bullhorn and I go to town on his butt. And a health officer makes a bad order, I go to town, I get them fired. And if they did nothing wrong, they won't be fired or resigned. If they're proud of their work and they're doing good work, no amount of me flapping my jaw is going to change that. But if you did something wrong, I think, or bad or immoral or unethical or not in keeping with modern day standards of judging and policing, I believe that the world deserves to know about that. And I do me. But this was not something that the mom was like, oh, can I pay you to go be a mountain? Like, no. So he's like, well, clearly the mom had this human rights attorney come do this press conference in front of the court, and there were signs, so it was clearly premeditated. And then he attached pictures, I think, to the back of the motion of the signs. And I'm like, really? You're going to put that in front of the judge? If I were the judge, I'd be like, yeah, this doesn't make me look so good. I'm thinking twice about this whole kit and caboodle now, but whatever. The dad's attorney did that and wanted the court to order the mother to not announce the time and place of where the kid's being handed off, and did not engage in any funny business, and to not do that. I mean, they're trying to gag order and probably hold the mother in contempt for the umpteenth time. It's just so backwoods, backward, draconian, dark ages, bullpucky. But yeah, I mean, that's where it's at right now. So that's the latest and greatest, and I have no idea what the judge is going to do with it, if they're even going to decide it before now on the 15th. But this child is up against the slipperiest of slippery and the darkest of dark, and hasn't been able to catch a break for 10 years in multiple jurisdictions. And between you and me, Lynn, and I think we know what we're talking about here, that defies statistical credulity.
Yeah, it does. That's absolutely.
Like, at some point, especially with the forensics being what they were, especially
Oh,
with dad having 10,000 images, some of which
that's
were
right. That's
very
right.
young children appearing to be sexually assaulted, tortured, and/or in bondage. At some point, some good cop and some good prosecutor and some good judge should have been able to take any of these pieces and make it go right. And the
That's
fact
right.
that it's gone one for 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 the most part against this poor child makes you wonder, I wonder what could be going on behind the scenes to effectuate such an amazing track record for the dad and the convicted sex offender grandpa. I
That's right.
wonder. I wonder.
Extremely consistent. I mean, that defies statistical logic also.
So I don't know, where that goes, but I'm not happy with the state of judging in Alachua County, Florida, and I'm sure that most of your listeners are also raising their eyebrows at these amazing modern day rulings that are so fair to child rape survivors.
Terribly.
And if you want to support the mom, and I'm not taking a single dime on this case. I'm just doing what I do out of the goodness of my heart, like I always do. But if you go to the page on my website, at the top right, there is all the way at the top, donate to victim. It's the green box down there.
So.
It takes you to a Give, Send, Go. And if everybody hearing this, instead of getting your morning Starbucks or afternoon Starbucks today, you take the 10 bucks, or heck, the 50 bucks you'd spend this week or month on frivolous stuff, and you were to actually give it to the mom, This is one of the ways you can be the hands and the feet of God. This is one of the ways you can actually help people who are under the most dark of dark oppression. And yeah, the mom's $2 million in the hole after the last 10 years of saving her kid. And you know, there's a lot of stuff that needs to go right this year. And it's not quite yet going right. But this world works on money, and so there's that. I'll leave you with that. And if you want to make it known to Governor DeSantis and the AG's office, let me see if I can pull up something here with contact data, because the contact data I had before was not the best. Give me one sec. Here
Okay.
it is. Here we go. You can reach out. You can reach out to the Florida Department of Child and Family, and oh, I know what it is. Give me one sec. I'll find it here. You can reach out to the Department of Child and Family, and here we go. Let me download this and I'll have the number for you in just a jiffy. The Department of, there we go. The Department of Child and Family is run by a very good-hearted woman. I don't know her at all, but from what the people in Florida tell me, she's a sane, logical person who actually cares about kids.
Good.
And her name is Siobhan Harris. And the phone number for the Department of Child and Family in her office is 850-488-9410. Again, that is 850-488-9410. And there's an email, and it's Siobhan, Shevaun dot Harris at myflfamilies.com, like short for myfloridafamilies.com. So again, her name is Siobhan, Shevaun dot Harris at myflfamilies.com. And you could just say simply that you're really concerned with the case, the way this case is going, and that you feel like DCF should take a good hard look to ensure the child's welfare is protected. And you can say it's regarding the case out of Alachua Family Justice Center involving judges James Nylon and Robert K. Grobe, Groebe, and a 13 and a half year old child. And if they want more information, they can go to my website, which is leedundas.com, the one you've been showing, Lynn. And there's a whole child abuse page there. And you could just print that off and send it as part of the email, or give the website and say, it's this case I'm concerned about. And you can do the same for the new Florida Attorney General. His email is OAG, short for Office of Attorney General, oag.civil.eserv. At myfloridalegal.com. I'll give you that email again. It's oag.civil.eserv at myfloridalegal.com. And his number, you have to leave a voicemail on their outgoing message, but you will get a call back, in my experience, is 850-414-3990. Again, that number, 850-414-3990. And the last person that I think should really be knowing about this is Ron DeSantis's office. And his phone number, his office's phone number, is 850-488-7146. Again, 850-488-7146. And the email for him is governorron.desantis at EOG, like E as in Edward, OG dot myflorida.com. Governor Ron dot DeSantis at EOG dot myflorida.com. So these are the people that we can reach out to and say, you know what? I'm concerned about this case. I believe the state of Florida can and should do better. From what I have seen on the forensics, these adults pose a distinct severe threat of risk of harm to the minor child. The minor child's opinion wasn't even, the abuse allegations weren't even considered. They were not allowed into evidence. The child's voice wasn't taken into account. And the notion that this child is going to spend the better part of a week with the person she accused of raping her at age four and below is horrifying in the light of the DNA and forensic evidence that was uncovered. And we really think that your offices, the AG, the governors, and the DCF should do something to effectuate justice on this case, whatever that looks like. And I think that if everybody took 5 minutes to, you know, send off an email pointing them to the website if you don't want to regurgitate all the facts, the website's got all the facts. I think that the more that our elected officials hear from us, the more likely they are to take action. There's just a direct correlation there, but it requires more than one person. It requires us to not just be eating bonbons on our couch, listening to Lee and Lynn talk about super sad cases. It requires us to stop doing this at the end of the podcast, go to your desktop and start typing. And it's a 5 or 10 minute ask, but this is how you become the heroes that you've been waiting to be. This is how you become the heroes you've heard about in the history books. And it's not a heavy lift. We're not asking you to storm the beach at Normandy in the 1940s. We're not asking you to get in a chopper and go to hot landing zones in Vietnam and rescue the men that were left behind and dead as you're getting napalmed because your guys missed the mark. And instead of the North Vietnamese, it's hitting your guys. This is a comparatively easy ask. And your voice may make the difference between this child being returned to somebody she accused of rape for 5 days in 2 weeks' time or not. So I beg you, I beg you, I beg you to actually make time this weekend to do these things. Go donate to the mom and go actually get off your armchair and do something by ringing the phones or hitting the emails of the places I just said. And the child and the family, I'm sure, will thank you as well.
Absolutely. Amen. And I encourage everyone who's listening to do exactly what Lee recommends. And I'll put in the notes everything you just said, Lee, of course, a link to your website. Encourage people to purchase your book out also. And all those phone numbers and emails. Well, because your story is awesome. I mean, it describes how you got to, although I bet the Hot Wheels story is not in there. But other than that, I'm sure.
Actually, my best friend and I saw a documentary, or I did, on how the North Vietnamese would dig tunnels. And we would go out and steal my dad's post hole diggers and try to dig a hole to tunnel into my mother's 1929 house's basement. And my mom just thought we were out there with like little plastic, breakable plastic shovels that you take to the beach. And she went out one day and we'd gotten the hole so deep, Lynn, that one of us would have to jump in and pass the dirt up. Like it was all in our head. He and I were very persistent children. I would not have wanted to be my parent or his. And my mother's like, holy heck, what is going on in the back 40? So she orders my dad to go mow the lawn and fill up the hole with grass trimmings and makes us put post hole diggers back. And then, we waited a couple days and then we dug it out and we started trying to do it again. But there are some, I've read a lot of trafficking books and I really try in here. I flip back and forth between my childhood and some really funny vignettes and my early litigation experience where one of my colleagues hung my bra from the chandelier in the receptionist ceiling in a high rise in Newport Beach. So I really try to leave the reader with a takeaway, like this is how we can be better people. This is what I learned from this experience in my life. And I really interweave a lot of funny episodes, including my stare down with a roach that was the size of a small rodent in a bathroom in a brothel in Thailand. Where, so here's the thing, we're staying in a brothel because when you go to work in these towns of 140 brothels, they don't have hotels, they're all brothels. So me and the pastor check in, we're right next to each other. I go to it's tropical. So I go to take a quick shower before we go hit the brothels to do some work. And I get out and they have the bath towel is a hand towel. And I've already seen the men in the doorways with their child sex slaves under with a loincloth on of these teeny tiny bath towels. I took one look at the bath towel and I go, oh, heck no, I know exactly what the men are using that for. I ain't touching that thing. So I do one of these, I pull the toilet paper and it's like, ooh, and I'm rolling it around my hand. And then I have this white oven mitt and toilet paper. And I am mid doing this to dry off, right? And out walks this ginormous cockroach that is like yay big. And I see him in the apartment bathroom and he sees me and he's like, hey, lightly, what the hell are you doing? And I look in the mirror because I look at his face. Cockroaches that are that big actually have a face that you can see. I look at his face and he's looking at me like, what the fudge? And I'm like, what are you looking at? And I look in the mirror and I've got little furry white paper, toilet paper bunnies stuck all over my skin, which is side note here. Which is why that we apparently have towels to dry off with and we don't just use toilet paper or napkins. I learned that the hard way. So I look at me and I look frightening. My hair is sticking straight up because I haven't done it yet. I look like I've stuck my finger in a socket and I've got these like white furry things all over my body and I'm stark raving naked. And I look back at the cockroach and I'm like, Okay, so we have a little stare down, and eventually he goes breaking. But I do try to interweave some of the lighter moments, because when you read a trafficking book, especially if it's your first time, and I know you know what I'm talking about, the darkness can be so overwhelming for the average person,
Kim.
and for the people who've lived through something similar, it can be triggering
That's right.
that you get done reading it and your face is the size of a pumpkin because you've been crying or trying not to cry for like 5 hours. And you're so overwhelmed that you're in apathy, which doesn't actually leave you activated, which is what we need. We need the
That's right.
soccer moms activated to educate junior high and high school youth and their church group about how trafficking happens so their kid's best friend doesn't end up falling into the hands of a pimp. Like, we need you active. So I intentionally, when I wrote the book, which is called Just Stand Up, My Fight for Freedom from the Brothels of Asia to the Streets of America, I intentionally put some lighthearted moments in there so that your face wouldn't be the size of the state of Texas from crying too much when you got done. And I also put in actual images with blurred out faces of the victims of the work I was doing in the brothels and what the inside of these, the brothel town I worked in the south of Thailand, had 330 bombs go off the first year I worked there in 2013. It was one a day because the radical jihadis were actually bombing it for their practice. And that is some of what those brothels look like. They have bars on the windows. They're former bank buildings that they've converted to brothels. But again, when I went to the printer, which ended up being my husband's mother because she had printing presses, she's like, it's going to double the cost of your copies if you put color photos in the middle. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm not doing this to make a dime. I am doing this to take the reader there without them having to go into a radical jihadi brothel town. But they can go there by the pages of the book. They can see what's happening in the world. And if they care and they want to be active, they've now got the tools and some insight and some foresight into where to go to actually make a change in their town or wherever they want to do it. So that's the book. Again, shameless plug. I didn't work for 4 years. I worked very hard for 4 years, but I took no money for 4 years because I was just fighting for freedom, doing convoys, and lawyers don't get paid to do convoys, newsflash. But yeah, if you buy the book, the money goes back into funding me to do the efforts that I do. And the more important piece is you get actual real world data about how to effectuate change so that our children are not trafficked, because as Lynn and I can tell you, this is one area where an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And you are the heroes you've been waiting for. Go forth, make change, don't delay. You can do it right now.
God bless you, Lee. And I want to thank everyone for listening in. And I know my audience, and I believe that 100% of you are going to do everything that Lee's recommending today. And I'm personally encouraging you to also purchase her book. And that's awesome about your stories, Lee. That's wonderful to hear, to end with a good laugh too. I mean, it's a horrific topic, but to be able to have the joy of the Lord carry us through makes it fine because it's all for the children.
Yeah, Nehemiah, the joy of the Lord. Guys, we are put here to do good work, to be God's hands and feet. And even if you don't know every single Bible passage in the Bible, protecting the least of us, being the voice for those who have no voice, this is what we're here to do. We're not here to watch daytime soap operas. We are here to actually change ourselves, change our families for the better, and change this planet for the better. And as Margaret Mead once said, never doubt a small group of concerned citizens can change the world, for indeed, we're the only ones who ever have. We are the change that we need to see. We just need to pick up our tools and start doing it. So today should be the day if you're not already doing it. It's been an honor to be here, Lynn. I'm so thankful for the platform. And I'm so sorry that I showed up super casual, a nod to Mel Kay. Sometimes she wears her ball cap on her shows. I don't think I've ever done this before, but you didn't want to see my hair today before I'd done it. So
I appreciate you being on, and everyone loves seeing you in all your different forms too. It's today, especially with the phone call, you were also, Lee the mom, Lee the mother. You're a normal human being on a fight for the children with the sword of God. That's how I see you. Yeah. So God bless you. God bless you. And we'll hopefully have you back on the podcast again soon, and we'll get updates on the case and how it's going.
sounds great, my dear. Talk to you guys soon. And thanks again for having me. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Lee.